Sure, any limb.
He went back to his writing. Livers, kidneys, stomachs, all kinds of things. Still working on hearts and lungs. Have to use mechanical substitutes. Fantastic. Mary Gay would be whole again, too. He shrugged.
Guess so. They've been doing it since before I was born. How old are you, sir?
I told him, and he whistled.
God damn! You must have been in it from the beginning.
His accent was very strange. All the words were right, but all the sounds were wrong.
Yeah, I was in the Epsilon attack. Aleph Null.
They'd started naming collapsars after letters of the Hebrew alphabet, in order of discovery. Then ran out of letters when the damn thing started cropping up all over the place. So they added numbers after the letters. Last I heard, they were up to Yod 42.
Wow! Ancient history. What was it like back then?
I don't know. Less crowded, nicer. Went back to Earth a year ago. Hell, a century ago. Depends on how you look at it. It was so bad I re-enlisted, you know. Bunch of zombies. No offense. He shrugged.
Never been there myself. People who come from there seem to miss it. Maybe it got better.
What, you were born on another planet? Heaven? No wonder I couldn't place his accent.
Born, raised, and drafted.
He put the pen back in his pocket and folded the clipboard up to a wallet-sized package.
Yes, sir, third generation angel. Best damned planet in all UNEF.
He spelled it out, didn't say UNIF, the way I'd always heard it.
Look, I've gotta run, Lieutenant. Two other monitors to check this hour.
He backed out the door.
You need anything. There's a buzzer on the table there.
Third generation angel. His grandparents came from Earth, probably when I was a young punk of 100. I wondered how many other worlds they'd colonized while my back was turned. Lose an arm, grow a new one? It was going to be good to settle down and live a whole year for every year that went by. The guy wasn't kidding about the pain. And it wasn't just the new leg, though that hurt like boiling oil. For the new tissues to take, they'd had to subvert my body's resistance to alien cells. Cancer broke out in a half dozen places and had to be treated separately, painfully.
This ends Disc 5. The War, Disc 6.
I was feeling pretty used up, but it was still kind of fascinating to watch the leg grow. White threads turned into blood vessels and nerves, first hanging a little slack, then moving into place as the musculature grew up around the metal bone. I got used to seeing it grow, so the sight never repelled me. But when Mary Gay came to visit, it was a jolt. She was ambulatory before the skin on her new arm had started to grow. Looked like a walking anatomy demonstration. I got over the shock, though, and she eventually came in for a few hours every day to play games, or trade gossip, or just sit and read, her arm slowly growing inside the plastic cast. I'd had skin for a week before they uncased the new leg and trundled the machine away. It was ugly as hell, hairless and dead white, stiff as a metal rod. But it worked, after a fashion. I could stand up and shuffle along. They transferred me to orthopedics for range and motion repatterning, a fancy new name for slow torture. They strap you into a machine that bends both the old and new legs simultaneously. The new one resists. Marigay was in a nearby section, having her arm twisted methodically. It must have been even worse on her. She looked gray and haggard every afternoon, when we met to go upstairs and sunbathe in the broken shade. As the days went by, the therapy became less like torture and more like strenuous exercise. We both began swimming for an hour or so every day, in the calm, pressor-guarded water off the beach. I still limped on land, but in the water, I could get around pretty well. The only real excitement we had on heaven, excitement to our combat-blunted sensibilities, was in that carefully guarded water. They have to turn off the pressor field for a split second every time a ship lands, otherwise it would just ricochet off over the ocean. Every now and then, an animal slips in, but the dangerous land animals are too slow to get through. Not so in the sea. The undisputed master of heaven's oceans is an ugly customer that the angels, in a fit of originality, named the shark. It could eat a stack of earth sharks for breakfast, though. The one that got in was an average-sized white shark who had been bumping around the edge of the pressor field for days, tormented by all that protein splashing around inside. Fortunately, there's a warning siren 2 minutes before the pressor is shut down, so nobody was in the water when he came streaking through. And streak through he did, almost beaching himself in the fury of his fruitless attack. He was 12 meters of flexible muscle, with a razor-sharp tail at one end and a collection of arm-length fangs at the other. His eyes, big yellow globes, were set on stalks more than a meter out from his head. His mouth was so wide, that open, a man could comfortably stand in it. Make an impressive photo for his heirs. They couldn't just turn off the pressor field and wait for the thing to swim away, so the recreation committee organized a hunting party. I wasn't too enthusiastic about offering myself up as an hors d'oeuvre to a giant fish, but Marigay had spearfished a lot as a kid growing up in Florida and was really excited by the prospect. I went along with the gag when I found out how they were doing it. Seemed safe enough. These sharks supposedly never attack people in boats. Two people who had more faith in fishermen's stories than I had gone out to the edge of the pressor field in a rowboat, armed only with a side of beef. They kicked the meat overboard, and the shark was there in a flash. This was the cue for us to step in and have our fun. There were 23 of us fools waiting on the beach with flippers, masks, breathers, and one spear each. The spears were pretty formidable, though, jet-propelled and with high-explosive heads. We splashed in and swam in phalanx, underwater, toward the feeding creature. When it saw us, at first it didn't attack. It tried to hide its meal, presumably so that some of us wouldn't be able to sneak around and munch on it while the shark was dealing with the others. But every time he tried for the deep water, he'd bump into the pressor field. He was obviously getting pissed off. Finally, he just let go of the beef, whipped around, and charged. Great sport. He was the size of your finger 1 second, way down there at the other end of the field, then suddenly as big as the guy next to you, and closing fast. Maybe 10 of the spears hit him. Mine didn't, and they tore him to shreds. But even after an expert or lucky brain shot that took off the top of his head and one eye, even with half his flesh and entrails scattered in a bloody path behind him, he slammed into our line and clamped his jaws around a woman, grinding off both of her legs before it occurred to him to die. We carried her, barely alive, back to the beach, where an ambulance was waiting. They poured her full of blood surrogate and no shock and rushed her to the hospital, where she survived to eventually go through the agony of growing new legs. I decided that I would leave the hunting of fish to other fish. Most of our stay at Threshold, once the therapy became bearable, was pleasant enough. No military discipline, lots of reading, and things to potter around with. But there was a pall over it, since it was obvious that we weren't out of the army, just pieces of broken equipment that they were fixing up to throw back into the fray. Mary Gay and I each had another 3 years to serve in our lieutenancies. But we did have 6 months of rest and recreation coming, once our new limbs were pronounced in good working order. Mary Gay was released 2 days before I was, but waited around for me. My back pay came to $892,746,012. Not in the form of bales of currency, fortunately. On Heaven, they used an electronic credit exchange. So I carried my fortune around in a little machine with a digital readout. To buy something, you punched in the vendor's credit number and the amount of purchase. The sum was automatically shuffled from your account to his. The machine was the size of a slender wallet and coded to your thumbprint. Heaven's economy was governed by the continual presence of thousands of resting, recreating millionaire soldiers. A modest snack would cost $100. A room for a night at least 10 times that. Since UNEF built and owned Heaven, this runaway inflation was pretty transparently a simple way of getting our accumulated pay back into the economic mainstream. We had fun. Desperate fun. We rented a flyer and camping gear and went off for weeks exploring the planet. There were icy rivers to swim and lush jungles to crawl through, meadows and mountains and polar wastes and deserts. We could be totally protected from the environment by adjusting our individual pressor fields. Sleep naked in a blizzard. Or we could take nature straight. At Mary Gay's suggestion, the last thing we did before coming back to civilization was to climb a pinnacle in the desert, fasting for several days to heighten our sensibilities, or warp our perceptions, I'm still not sure, and sit back to back in the searing heat, contemplating the languid flux of life. Then off to the flesh pots. We toured every city on the planet, and each had its own particular charm. But we finally returned to Sky to spend the rest of our leave time. The rest of the planet was bargain basement compared to Sky. In the 4 weeks we were using the Airborne Pleasure Dome as our home base, Mary Gay and I each went through a good $500 million. We gambled, sometimes losing $1 million or more in a night. Ate and drank the finest the planet had to offer, and sampled every service and product that wasn't too bizarre for our admittedly archaic tastes. We each had a personal servant whose salary was rather more than that of a major general. Desperate fun, as I said. Unless the war changed radically, our chances of surviving the next 3 years were microscopic. We were remarkably healthy victims of a terminal disease, trying to cram a lifetime of sensation into a half of a year. We did have the consolation, not small, that however short the remainder of our lives would be, we would at least be together. For some reason, it never occurred to me that even that could be taken from us. We were enjoying a light lunch in the transparent first floor of Sky, watching the ocean glide by underneath us, when a messenger bustled in and gave us 2 envelopes, our orders. Mary Gay had been bumped to captain, and I to major, on the basis of our military records and tests we had taken at Threshold. I was a company commander, and she was a company's executive officer. But they weren't the same company. She was going to muster with a new company being formed right here on Heaven. I was going back to Stargate for indoctrination and education before taking command. For a long time, we couldn't say anything. "I'm going to protest," I said finally, weakly. "They can't make me a commander, into a commander." She was still struck dumb. This was not just a separation. Even if the war was over, and we left for Earth only a few minutes apart, in different ships, the geometry of the collapsar jump would pile up years between us. When the second one arrived on Earth, his partner would probably be a half century older, more probably dead. We sat there for some time, not touching the exquisite food, ignoring the beauty around us and beneath us, only conscious of each other and the two sheets of paper that separated us with a gulf as wide and real as death. We went back to Threshold. I protested, but my arguments were shrugged off. I tried to get Mary Gay assigned to my company as my exec. They said my personnel had all been allotted. I pointed out that most of them probably hadn't even been born yet. Nevertheless, allotted, they said. It would be almost a century, I said, before I even get to Stargate. They replied that Strike Force Command plans in terms of centuries, not in terms of people. We had a day and a night together. The less said about that, the better. It wasn't just losing a lover. Mary Gay and I were each other's only link to real life, the Earth of the 1980s and 90s, not the perverse grotesquerie we were supposedly fighting to preserve. When her shuttle took off, it was like a casket rattling down into a grave. I commandeered computer time and found out the orbital elements of her ship and its departure time. Found out I could watch her leave from our desert. I landed on the pinnacle where we had starved together, and a few hours before dawn, watched a new star appear over the western horizon, flare to brilliance and fade as it moved away, becoming just another star, then a dim star, and then nothing. I walked to the edge and looked down the sheer rock face to the dim, frozen rippling of dunes half a kilometer below. I sat with my feet dangling over the edge, thinking nothing, until the sun's oblique rays illuminated the dunes in a soft, tempting chiaroscuro of low relief. Twice I shifted my weight, as if to jump. When I didn't, it was not for fear of pain or loss. The pain would be only a bright spark, and the loss would be only the armies, and it would be their ultimate victory over me, having ruled my life for so long, to force an end to it. That much I owed to the enemy. Major Mandela, 2458 to 3143 A.D. Chapter 1. What was that old experiment they told us about in high school biology? Take a flatworm and teach it how to swim through a maze, then mash it up and feed it to a stupid flatworm. And lo, the stupid flatworm would be able to swim the maze, too. I had a bad taste of Major General in my mouth. Actually, I suppose they had refined the technique since my high school days. With time dilation, that was about 450 years for research and development. At Stargate, my orders said I was to undergo indoctrination and education prior to taking command of my very own strike force, which was what they still called a company. For my education on Stargate, they didn't mince up major generals and serve them to me with hollandaise. They didn't feed me anything except glucose for 3 weeks. Glucose and electricity. They shaved every hair off my body, gave me a shot that turned me into a dish rag, attached dozens of electrodes to my head and body, immersed me in a tank of oxygenated fluorocarbon, and hooked me up to an ALSC. That's an Accelerated Life Situation Computer. It kept me busy. I guess it took the machine about 10 minutes to review everything I had learned previously about the martial, excuse the expression, arts. Then it started in on the new stuff. I learned the best way to use every weapon, from a rock to a Nova bomb. Not just intellectually. That's what all those electrodes were for. Cybernetically controlled negative feedback kinesthesia. I felt the weapons in my hands and watched my performance with them, and did it over and over until I did it right. The illusion of reality was total. I used a spear thrower with a band of Maasai warriors on a village raid, and when I looked down at my body, it was long and black. I relearned Ape from a cruel-looking man in foppish clothes in an 18th-century French courtyard. I sat quietly in a tree with a Sharps rifle and sniped at blue-uniformed men as they crawled across a muddy field toward Vicksburg. In 3 weeks, I killed several regiments of electronic ghosts. It seemed more like a year to me, but the ALSC does strange things to your sense of time. Learning to use useless exotic weapons was only a small part of the training. In fact, it was the relaxing part, because when I wasn't in kinesthesia, the machine kept my body totally inert and zapped my brain with 4 millennia's worth of military facts and theories, and I couldn't forget any of it, not while I was in the tank. Want to know who Scipio Aemilianus was? I don't. Bright light of the Third Punic War. War is the province of danger, and therefore courage above all things is the first quality of a warrior, von Clausewitz maintained. And I'll never forget the poetry of the advance party minus normally moves in a column formation with the platoon headquarters leading, followed by a laser squad, the heavy weapons squad, and the remaining laser squad. The column relies on observation for its flank security, except when the terrain and visibility dictate the need for small security detachments to the flanks, in which case the advance party commander will detail 1 platoon sergeant, and so on. That's from Strike Force Command Small Unit Leader's Handbook. As if you could call something a handbook when it takes up to 2 whole microfiche cards, 2,000 pages. If you want to become a thoroughly eclectic expert in a subject that repels you, join UNIF and sign up for officer training. 119 people, and I was responsible for 118 of them. Counting myself, but not counting the Commodore, who could presumably take care of herself. I hadn't met any of my company during the 2 weeks of physical rehabilitation that followed the ALSC session. Before our first muster, I was supposed to report to the temporal orientation officer. I called for an appointment, and his clerk said the colonel would meet me at the Level 6 Officers Club after dinner. I went down to 6 early, thinking to eat dinner there, but they had nothing but snacks, so I munched on a fungus thing that vaguely resembled escargot and took the rest of my calories in the form of alcohol. Major Mandela? I'd been busily engaged in my 7th beer and hadn't seen the colonel approach. I started to rise, but he motioned for me to stay seated and dropped heavily into the chair opposite me.
I'm in your debt, he said. You saved me from at least half a boring evening.
He offered his hand.
Jack Kynock at your service. Colonel, don't colonel me, and I won't major you. We old fossils have to keep our perspective, William.
All right with me. He ordered a kind of drink I'd never heard of.
Where to start? Last time you were on Earth was 2007, according to the records.
That's right.
Didn't like it much, did you?
No. Zombies, happy robots.
Well, it got better. Then it got worse, thank you.
A private brought his drink, a bubbling concoction that was green at the bottom of the glass and lightened to chartreuse at the top. He sipped.
Then they got better again, then worse, then, I don't know, cycles.
What's it like now?
Well, I'm not really sure. Stacks of reports and such, but it's hard to filter out the propaganda. I haven't been back in almost 200 years. It was pretty bad then, depending on what you like.
What do you mean?
Oh, let me see. There was lots of excitement. Ever hear of the pacifist movement?
I don't think so.
The name's deceptive. Actually, it was a war, a guerrilla war. I thought I could give you name, rank, and serial number of every war from Troy on up.
He smiled. They must have missed one.
For good reason. It was run by veterans, survivors of Yod 38 and Aleph 40, I hear. They got discharged together and decided they could take on all of UNIF, Earthside. They got lots of support from the population.
But didn't win.
We're still here.
He swirled his drink, and the colors shifted.
Actually, all I know is hearsay. Last time I got to Earth, the war was over, except for some sporadic sabotage. And it wasn't exactly a safe topic of conversation.
It surprises me a little, I said. Well, more than a little, that Earth's population would do anything at all against the government's wishes. He made a noncommittal sound. Least of all revolution. When we were there, you couldn't get anybody to say a damned thing against the UNIF, or any of the local governments, for that matter. They were conditioned from year to year to accept things as they were.
Ah, that's a cyclic thing, too.
He settled back in his chair.
It's not a matter of technique. If they wanted to, Earth's government could have total control over every non-trivial thought and action of each citizen, from cradle to grave. They don't do it because it would be fatal, because there's a war on. Take your own case. Did you get any motivational conditioning while you were in the can?
I thought for a moment. If I did, I wouldn't necessarily know about it.
That's true. Partially true. But take my word for it, they left that part of your brain alone. Any change in your attitude toward UNIF or the war, or war in general, comes only from new knowledge. Nobody's fiddled with your basic motivations. And you should know why.
Names, dates, figures rattled down through the maze of new knowledge. Tet 17, Sed 21, Aleph 14, the Laszlo Emergency Commission Report, June 2106.
Right, and by extension, your own experience on Aleph 1. Robots don't make good soldiers.
They would, I said. Up to the 21st century, behavioral conditioning would have been the answer to a general's dream. Make up an army with all the best features of the SS, the Praetorian Guard, the Golden Horde, Mosby's Raiders, the Green Berets. He laughed over his glass.
Then put that army up against a squad of men in modern fighting suits. It'd be over in a couple of minutes.
So long as each man in the squad kept his head about him, and just fought like hell to stay alive. The generation of soldiers that had precipitated the Laszlo reports had been conditioned from birth to conform to somebody's vision of the ideal fighting man. They worked beautifully as a team, totally bloodthirsty, placing no great importance on personal survival. And the Torrens cut them to ribbons. The Torrens also fought with no regard for self, but they were better at it, and there were always more of them. Kynok took a drink and watched the colors.
"I've seen your psych profile," he said, "both before you got here and after your session in the can. It's essentially the same, before and after."
"That's reassuring." I signaled for another beer.
"Maybe it shouldn't be."
"What, it says I won't make a good officer? I told them that from the beginning. I'm no leader."
"Right, in a way. Wrong, in a way. Want to know what that profile says?"
I shrugged. "Classified, isn't it?"
"Yes," he said. "But you're a major now. You can pull the profile of anybody in your command."
"I don't suppose it has any big surprises." But I was a little curious. What animal isn't fascinated by a mirror?
"No, it says you're a pacifist. A failed one at that, which gives you a mild neurosis, which you handle by transferring the burden of guilt to the army."
The fresh beer was so cold it hurt my teeth.
"No surprises yet. And as far as being a leader, you do have a certain potential, but it would be along the lines of a teacher or a minister. You would have to lead from empathy, compassion. You have the desire to impose your ideas on other people, but not your will, which means, you're right, you'll make one hell of a bad officer, unless you shape up."
I had to laugh. UNIF must have known all of this when they ordered me to officer training.
"There are other parameters," he said. "For instance, you're adaptable, reasonably intelligent, analytical, and you're one of the 11 people who's lived through the whole war."
Surviving is a virtue in a private. Couldn't resist it. "But an officer should provide gallant example, go down with the ship, stride the parapet as if unafraid." He harumphed at that.
"Not when you're 1,000 light years from your replacement."
"It doesn't add up, though. Why would they haul me all the way from heaven to take a chance on my shaping up, when probably 1/3 of the people here on Stargate are better officer material? God, the military mind."
"I suspect the bureaucratic mind at least had something to do with it. You have an embarrassing amount of seniority to be a foot soldier."
"That's all time dilation. I've only been in 3 campaigns."
"Immaterial. Besides, that's 2.5 more than the average soldier survives. The propaganda boys will probably make you into some kind of a folk hero."
Folk hero. I sipped at the beer. "Where is John Wayne now that we really need him?"
"John Wayne?" He shook his head. "I never went in the can, you know. I'm no expert at military history."
"Forget it." Kynok finished his drink and asked the private to get him, I swear to God, a rum Antares.
"Well, I'm supposed to be your temporal orientation officer. What do you want to know about the present? What passes for the present?"
Still on my mind. "You've never been in the can?"
"No, combat officers only. The computer facilities and energy you go through in 3 weeks would keep the Earth running for several days. Too expensive for us desk warmers."
"Your decorations say you're combat."
"Honorary. I was."
The rum Antares was a tall, slender glass with a little ice floating at the top, filled with pale amber liquid. At the bottom was a bright red globule about the size of a thumbnail. Crimson filaments waved up from it.